Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Beat, brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV and on-demand together at DirecTVStream.com. I am Nick Baumgartner, of course. I hope
Nick.
Buddy. We already screwed up an ad once today. Nick, I hope I got that right.
Way not to blow it, bud, on that ad read. Good work.
Hey, my apologies to the ad people. Brendan screwed up an ad last week. We're going to make payment for that. No big deal. But hey, we're back for a special edition of The Beat with Austin Meek and Colton Bouncy, as promised.
We got sponsors withholding payment over ineptitude.
It's Brendan's ineptitude, first of all, and we're going to make good, the ad folks have told us. We're going to take care of the issue. So we're on our way. We love DirecTV Stream here at The Beat and everyone else. Colton and Austin, how are we doing, gentlemen?
Good, guys. I want to know, what are you guys going to call the show next week? When you can't do the 6-0 versus 6-0, somebody's going to have a 1 on there. It's going to really create some extra work.
That's a great question.
We'll say one is 8-0, the other one is 7-1.
Yeah. The other's a fraud, basically. The other's a fraud, right? The other's a
fraud. Fire the coach, whoever he may be.
Yeah. Fire the coach, whoever he may be. But either way, I mean, we've got one here, guys, that we all predicted, of course, and we all saw coming. Colton probably did somewhere along the way in his January predictions, thought this would be an undefeated battle. No one did, of course. No one thought. I mean, I don't know what we would have thought. We talked yesterday. We put together something Colton, Austin, and I did for later in the week. And one of the first things that came to my head was to sort of ask you guys what you really thought maybe this would have been. Like, let's say when the season started. Take me back to, like, August. And if I would have asked you both, like, in August, based on where the teams were and, you know, where your familiarity was with the roster and everything else. I'll start with Colton and then Austin after that. But, you know, what would you have thought maybe this game realistically would have been, you know, back when camp started?
Yeah, I would have said something similar to what we saw last year where, you know, Mel Tucker's still early in his tenure, still trying to get things going. I thought coming into the year that, you know, 6-6, 7-5 would be a good year.
Yeah.
And if you can make it to a bowl, maybe win that one, that gives you some recruiting momentum. Obviously, winning a game like this also helps with some in-state recruiting. So I would have said, you know, obviously not the same as last year because you were 2-5, and that was one of your few shining moments when you beat Michigan. But mm-hmm. at the same time, I thought the path to get there was kind of similar. And I would have said that this was a bigger game for Michigan than it was for Michigan State. Now it's equally as big for both teams, considering that they're both undefeated. You know, they both have all of their goals still on the table, and they both want to accomplish that. And so I think for both teams right now, they're kind of in the spot where, you know, this game matters more than anyone thought before the season, and they're both trying to win it.
Austin, same for you. What would Michigan be looking like in your mind here?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely didn't see 7-0 coming. you know, I thought that this was going to be kind of like Colton said. I thought this was going to be kind of a developmental year for Michigan, where you're trying to set the table for the future. You know, the one thing I will say is looking at that schedule before the season, it was hard to find a lot of losses on there before November. I didn't think they'd beat Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So I thought there'd be at least one loss. You know, I thought the Washington game was going to be harder than it was. I thought Northwestern was going to be better. I thought Nebraska was going to be better. So in some ways, you know, they've got some breaks with the schedule to be 7-0 right now. And I think we always knew that the hardest games were going to come in November. But it's not just 7-0. It's also how it's looked. And it's just looked a lot better than I thought it would look, especially on defense. I really bought into the idea that, you know, hey, look, give Mike McDonald a year, and then we'll come back and see what it looks like. But no, I mean, it pretty much from day one, the defense has really been on point.
Now, Brendan, I'm going to ask you the same thing, as your perspective is unique here, because you know, and we talk, you and I talk.
I know nothing. Yeah.
Well, you and I talk, and you know, I share things with you as things go along throughout the year. Sure. Where things were in August, all the things that, you know, we all know here, both sides of this, where would you have thought, looking back, this was headed? Because let's put context on this now. Where did you think this was headed?
I thought it was going to be bad. I thought it was going to be a bad, bad scene for both. I thought we were all going to already kind of be into that, like, this is the...
Yep.
Is this going to be the loss that ends the tenure in Ann Arbor? Is this going to be, you know, and that... I thought both were going to be really bad. When I saw, like, Michigan State's transfer numbers, it's just... There isn't that many points of context for it in either sport, basketball or football, for... An overhaul via transfers having immediate success and
really hard to do.
Being anything more than a bridge, like at best. You know, we talked about this, Nick. Like, I always think that coaches early in their tenure who have a degree of leeway on winning, mm-hmm. who might not have to walk in the door and win immediately, that they kind of do a disservice to their own clock. By
winning.
Going transfer heavy or going JUCO heavy and just trying to win games immediately as opposed to building for the long term, where in year 3-4 where you're needing that next contract, now your guys have been in your system, been in your program. So like that's how, you know, I thought that this might actually kind of be, you know, a bad turn in without knowing anything about who the hell these transfers were. I didn't know that random dude from Wake Forest I never heard of was going to go out and be a Heisman candidate. Right. So, you know, that's... I didn't think it's. I thought this year was going to. I thought we were going to be talking basketball right now. And frankly, we can if you want.
I thought. So I'll give you mine and then we can get into whatever we want. I thought this was going to be two part. You know, Michigan State, I thought this was going to be one of those deals where, yeah, the first 2 months of the season were going to be rocky as hell and he was going to have a really hard time keeping all of those new faces satisfied. When I say that, I mean like keeping every. And Colton, you know, because like all of the new people, there's so many new players on that team. It's ridiculous. How many people in total? Do we have a number?
It was 33 scholarship between freshmen and transfers, 33 players, and then 15 on scholarship for just transfers.
That's a ton. That's like an NFL team, like a whole new, you know, NFL team coming into your roster. So I think that was my thing. It's going to be rocky. And I thought, up and down, up and down, up and down, and that'll be your first kind of measuring test. They'll be like 500 somewhere in there, and we'll see maybe where they're at. And then, like, Brendan, I mean, in Austin, too, we talked about this a ton all year. Austin and I wrote that story in August about, you know, Harbaugh's last stand or whatever. This game was, in my mind, probably going to, you know, I thought of, like, 2013 Brady Hoke coming to Michigan State the one year where it was like, you better do it or this is it.
I was thinking, that they would have, you know, like, two losses early. Nebraska. Whatever.
He got another year after that or whatever, so that wasn't his last Michigan State game, but like that's what this sort of felt like to me coming into that year, where it was like, whatever it is at this point, you have to acquit yourself so much better than what we've seen. And that's not the conversation today, because both staffs have put together, I mean, tell me I'm wrong, I think both of them are Coach of the Year candidates nationally in every whatever you want to, in every metric or measurement you want to say. I mean, I don't know your thoughts on any of this, anybody, but like, tell me I'm wrong, because I think both these guys have been awesome to this point. 7-0, 7-0. We'll see what happens the rest of the way, but their situations were not easy and they fixed them. I mean, I don't know how else to look at it, right? Like, thoughts, anyone? Yeah. Tell me I'm wrong.
I think when you look at what Michigan State did with the portal, like, I get that there's always some risk involved there, but at the same time, it's like, that roster was bad last year. It was so bad. If you look at where some of those dudes ended up, some of them aren't even playing FBS football right now. You know,
that's
so
the telltale, it's like right there. Hmm?
The risk with that is, okay, how do you blend the returning players with the new guys? And Mel Tucker had a plan with that. He seemed to want to incorporate them early and often. He asked them how they were doing, checked in on them, things like that. All the right things. But I didn't really think there was much risk in going out and getting some of these dudes, considering that they needed better players and some were available in the portal. And a guy like Kenneth Walker, like, I know, you know, coming from Wake Forest, not the biggest school, they're doing well now, but last year, you know, mm-hmm. he was kind of under the radar. He was everything that they needed. If you just watch any of his tape, you know, all of that stuff that he's doing now was evident on tape. And then you put him on a team like this with some playmakers on the outside of receiver, the development of Peyton Thorne and the steps that he's taken, you kind of see it all coming together. And you saw that a little bit over fall camp and things like that. And you're hearing tidbits here and there. But again, for it to come together the way that it did, it's a testament to what Mel Tucker's done, the message from the staff on down, the collective buy-in across the board. So yeah, I think when you're talking about Coach of the Year candidates, he's certainly up there after going 2-5 last year. But I mean, Jim Harbaugh too, he's done a great job, and I don't think a lot of people expected that with his coaching staff changes. So both coaches really done great.
People could laugh and make fun of us all we want, but Austin, this dude was like lifeless on January 1. Dead in the water.
Yeah.
It was done. It was like, we're just going to see at the end of the year and he's going to get fired. That's how it's going to be. That's what the mood was around Michigan. That's
if you were on any of those Zoom calls last year and you watched Jim Harbaugh, I mean, he's almost unrecognizable at this point, just in the change.
It's like a different person.
His energy, the change in the energy around the program. I mean, it's totally night and day. Yeah, and I am always aware of how quickly things can change. Like, we had been doing this show before the season, none of us would have thought we'd be here. And that's how much things can change in half a year. And now we've got another half of the year to see what happens. You know, I do think I'd be curious to hear what you guys think. If Michigan State fades down the stretch, I think people will still look at this Michigan State season and still look at Mel Tucker and say, hey, that was a really successful year two.
Totally agree.
If Michigan fades down the stretch, I think people will forget about what happened in the first half of the season.
And Same as it ever was.
We'll be right back to where it's different. I don't want to plant that thought in anybody's mind.
But they're
right
different
now,
situations. I totally agree. Because they're both in different spots, right? As coaches. I mean, this is year 7 and year 2. It's not the same thing.
Yeah.
I totally agree. I think Michigan State's, to a degree, it's house money, but I don't think it is for Mel Tucker. I mean, like, Colton, I tell Brendan this all the time, like, and that's what I wanted. That's part of why I wanted to have you guys both on, because the Mel Tucker mindset is, I think, a little different than most people realize, right? Like, he wants to win national titles. He wants to be the best possible whatever he is of himself at all times. Demands it from everybody around him all the time. I shed some light for the folks there on your impressions of Mel Tucker, the leader, and then I guess Mel Tucker, what drives Mel and why he is who he is, I guess, or why he's good.
Yeah, I mean, this dude's different. I'll just say that. Like,
he is, right? That's why I wanted. Yeah, go for it.
He is. And, you know, I think there was an SI story on Michigan State a few weeks ago, and I think there's an anecdote in there where, I guess, when he was being interviewed for the job, he showed up with this big-ass binder about, you know, all his plans and what he can do at Michigan State. And, like, I guess you hear some of that from time to time, but the way that he talks – there's no, like, he's not, like, smirking behind. Like, you don't get the sense that, like, he's bullshitting anyone. Like, it's all real, and he believes everything that he says. And it's, like, some guys you can tell that they're just putting on a face for the media or whatever when we get to talk to them. But I truly believe that he thinks that he can win at Michigan State. He's kind of instilled that throughout the team. You know, I think before the first game of the year against Northwestern, he was in the locker room saying, we're for real. Like, you guys are for real. Everything that we've done, they're going to see it now. And that's, you know, you see his pregame speeches and things like that, and it really reflects, like, his mindset and everything he's all about. That neutral thinking, you know, never dwell on the past, never look ahead, stay in the moment, stay present. He believes that wholeheartedly. He's got his team to believe that wholeheartedly, his staff, his support staff, everyone involved. Like, he has the CEO mindset where he's running his program, and everyone's going to have that same mindset that's along for the ride. And so I think you're seeing that this year. That's one of the reasons why they're in the spot that they are, along with the transfer portal and, you know, adding some talent to this roster. But really, people talk about culture shifts. I think that, you know, people talk about it a lot, but at the same time, he is actually living that, and I think you're seeing it with this team right now.
So, Colton, you know, last year's Michigan State game, it really was kind of a throwaway for, you know, I mean, there was no fans. It just, the game sucked. Neither team was good. Right? So we didn't really see, you know, how Mel fosters the rivalry, if that's the right word. You know what I mean? So, like, how do you think he handles this week internally? Is it treated any differently? Do things get dialed up? Does he tap into kind of that you know, the emotion, whatever the hell it may be. How does he play something like this?
Probably behind closed doors more than on the outside. He's not going to be D'Antonio where he's out here like talking shit like the media. Right. He's not that kind of guy. People are going to be disappointed if they're expecting that from him. But definitely behind closed doors. You know, I've talked to some people that say his speeches are like the best thing they've ever heard, and he's going to get those guys ready to play. And I think Xavier Henderson was talking the other day, like, you know, he's giving them a history lesson on the Paul Bunyan Trophy, and he's doing some stuff like that because you kind of have to with all these new guys, right? Like,
right.
Some of these dudes weren't even in the Big Ten. They don't know anything about. They never stepped foot in Michigan before they got to campus. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that. They don't know anything about this rivalry. So he's doing some of that behind the scenes this week with the freshmen, and the transfers, kind of, you know, get them involved in this rivalry. And I imagine the closer we get to Saturday, you'll see more of it. Maybe start to leak on social media with the creative stuff with that staff over there and kind of the message that they want to put out. But yeah, I think he's going to get those guys ready to play for sure.
That's a good point about all the transfer. Like, Kenneth Walker's one of the highest profile players in this game, you know, especially nationally. I mean, he's got that Heisman buzz, and here he is just walking into a fire that he had nothing to do with 4 months ago.
Right. It's like 80 guys on either side there. Like, like Michigan's whole staff is like, it's all new energy. Like, both of these teams remind me of Michigan's 2015 team. Because Harbaugh and Mel Tucker, Austin, I'm curious for your thoughts. I see similarities in the way that these two deal with their players. They're both, like, when Colton says he goes into the locker room before the first game of the season and looks at the kids and says, like, I've been around enough football. You guys are good. I don't give a shit what anybody else thinks. And if you want to debate me, you can. But, like, you know how much energy and confidence that gives to people? Harbaugh did the same thing to the 2015 team. The ability to sort of come in and be like a football first, like, pro. And I knew right away that Harbaugh would Tom Crean, of course. But, like, I knew Harbaugh would like Mel Tucker from a football standpoint, because there are similarities. I don't know if Mel likes. I don't know if Mel likes Harbaugh or everyone staying out with him. Probably not, right? Not. I would doubt it. Wouldn't blame him. But, like, from a football standpoint, I think these guys are, like, very similar. I really do. Austin, I'm curious for your thoughts on that, because we haven't been around Mel that much in the 2 years here. But there are days that I hear something Mel says, and I'm like, that reminds me of something Harbaugh would say, or he would say it the same way.
Yeah. Always a Tom Crean connection to everything, right?
Yeah, Kevin Bacon,
right? 6 degrees from Tom Crean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think – so you covered Jim Harbaugh early in his tenure. I didn't. So I've only seen, like, you know, the later era Jim Harbaugh.
Sure, yeah, which is very different than the early
The ratchet-ass version.
Broken down.
I wonder
– this is much similar to the old – yeah, right.
I wonder if some of the things that we are seeing from Jim Harbaugh this year – are similar to some of the things that he did, like, in year one with this Michigan program. I mean, one thing that I've heard from a lot of people, players, people around the program, is the way this year Jim Harbaugh had it. It's less of, like, Jim Harbaugh, the authoritarian, telling everybody what to do, and more of Jim Harbaugh empowering the team to really have ownership of what happens on the field. You know, whether it's that players' leadership council they have this year, whether it's the music at practice, you know, just a bunch of little things, you know, even like the uniforms, you know, letting the players have some say in what they wear. You know, I think a lot of those things are, you know, they are a shift toward being, a program that's a little more player friendly. Yeah. And I think that is showing up in the energy that Michigan has on the field. Everybody was beaten down last year. Like, just everybody was. When you were, you know, I mean, we only talked to those guys on Zoom, so we weren't with them in person. But there was just a sense that everybody was weighed down by what happened last year. And it just feels like, you know, and this is something from afar that I kind of sense with Mel Tucker, too, of, you know, really, really building a program around the players. Which is a little bit of an attitude shift for coaches like Jim Harbaugh, who came up in a time when Bo Schembechler wasn't doing that. But that's the way you got to do it now. And I think both of these programs are seeing some benefits from that.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, what it reminds, it's not the same as 2015, because they were very militaristic, and it was very much the old way, the old Harbaugh. Mm. And it was when they started training, I don't know, you remember this, when they started training camp that year, he didn't tell them what time practice started. Somebody just knocked on their door in the dorms and woke them up at 4 a.m. and they went to practice. Okay. Like, that's what happened. But that was for that team in that spot at that time, it worked. It was whatever that group needed. This is much different, but because I think he's listening to his roster. But what he's done is he's created a situation where, you know, that 2015 team worked harder than any Michigan team I have ever seen, and they liked it. They, like, enjoyed it. That's what this team is doing. And Colton, that's, I think, what Michigan State is already doing in year two. Like, last year, they went to work, and guys whined and complained, and a lot of them left. One of them came back. But, like, we saw some of all that sort of thing. But now I think what you're seeing, you saw the new guys come in. It was good timing with that because you got some character guys within that, you know, core that you brought in. But now I bet you pull those kids every week and they say, my favorite part of the day is we go practice. And it sucks and it's hard, but like that's the time where we get better and we all love that. I think both of those coaches have pushed the right buttons. Colton, your thoughts on that part there too, like I just said.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you talk to players this offseason, they would tell you that they just weren't prepared last year. And, you know, it's not really on the coaching staff. It was just a product of the year that was. And coaches will tell you, too, like, we didn't have all the time that we needed to install everything that we wanted. And players will say, yeah, it took us until spring football to really master the system and believe that we're going to be good at what we're doing out there in the field. You know, that's crazy to hear, but that was kind of the circumstance. And so for the returning players, you always kind of wonder, you know, how they deal with transfers coming in. I think the ones who stayed were confident in what the staff was doing. They bought in. And I think
were they champions?
Kind of,
well.
not yet.
I will say that those guys that stayed, you know, they were fully bought into what the staff was telling them. Otherwise, they would have entered the portal too.
Yeah.
And so they took it upon themselves to kind of introduce some of these new guys and, you know, incorporate them into what they do. And I also think they embraced the challenge of having to compete for spots and having to, you know, not get complacent out there. Like, that was the big benefit of the portal, more so than, you know, adding a guy like Kenneth Walker and things like that, good players. But the other side of it, which I wrote about in my story, was, like, it elevated, you know, the level of competition on that team. They were competing every single day. Coaches were keeping track of how many hours they slept, you know, nutrition, like, all that stuff that kind of goes into things in fall camp that when these battles are close, you have to kind of pay attention to. And so I think what that did is it kind of brought out the best in each player. Even a guy like Peyton Thorne, who, you know, they brought in Anthony Russo to compete for that starting job. He ends up winning it. But if Russo isn't here, I don't know if Thorne reaches that level.
No
not
way.
To say that he wasn't working hard, but
no way.
It pushed him to be the best player in fall camp. And he won that job, and he's taken it and run with it. And you're seeing that at different positions, not just quarterbacks. So I think when you're talking about that offseason and kind of that coaching shift, all of that is kind of involved there.
The strategy is different because the sport is different now than it was in 2015. But what Mel Tucker did with the portal and Jim Harbaugh did with Hoax, the transition of I've got some good here and a lot that's maybe not, it's the same. I mean, Brendan, you remember this. People got all mad. Remember him telling those fifth-year seniors, like, you got to go. And people were like, this is outrageous. And he's like, I don't give a shit. We need better players here.
Yeah, yeah.
He raised, and Tucker did the same thing. He raised the lowest level of like what it takes to be able to compete on this practice field without getting like embarrassed to the point of you have to go home now.
Like he that's said what he was going to do. Yeah. He telegraphed all of this last year in his comments. Like compete to play.
Every day he did.
Every single day. Right. He used every single media opportunity to say, if you're not good enough, your ass is out of here.
I remember when he would say that he'd just like finish the sentence and he'd be like, compete to play, compete to stay. And you'd be like, where did that come from? And he would just like drop it in there. You're like, well, somebody's getting run out of here after practice today.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I have a question about the game. The delegate from Canton has a question about the interstate game. Plymouth? Same thing. Yeah. I'm near Plymouth. I'm technically in Canton, Nick.
I know. That was a joke.
All right. So both of you know plenty about the other team, right? And Nick did a great job on that, how Michigan can beat Michigan State, how Michigan State can beat Michigan. But for you two, can you each pinpoint for me what you think, which battle you're most interested in, like how it determines the game, whether it be, you know, Michigan's running attack, right, being slowed by Michigan State, like unit versus unit, which one you each kind of find most interesting?
So I think the one that I'm going to be watching, I'm really curious to see how Michigan's secondary plays in this game, especially after last year. The Ricky White game, everybody remembers that. And it's been a totally different Michigan secondary this year, but they also, they haven't yet faced the best quarterbacks that they're going to play on their schedule. I think Michigan State's going to be able to run the ball to a certain extent. Like, I don't expect Michigan to just come out and shut down Kenneth Walker. But I really think the game could come down to, and Nick and I were talking about this earlier, can Peyton Thorne hit like two or three shots over the top? Can Reed and Naylor make a couple big plays? Because in a game that could be really tight, I think that could be the difference. Michigan's cornerbacks, I mean, it's basically the same guys. Like, they didn't go into the transfer portal and right. get guys to come in and play corner. They've got
I think
the
they
same.
Tried. yeah.
Right.
If they could have, maybe they would have. Right? Yeah, right. But they didn't. They've got the same guys.
Right. Yeah.
That were out there for the most part last year. You know, DJ Turner is in there now and has played well, but. Mm-hmm. To me, that's the matchup. Can Michigan take away the big plays over the top? If they can, then I think they can do enough against Walker to win the game.
Yeah, I mean, that scar tissue has got to be there. Oh, and totally, like in the first quarter, right? In like one of the first or second possessions, Michigan State bangs one.
Yeah.
Oof. That's what I would do.
Oof. You know, then you're
– Right? You're, right away.
You can probably see – oh, absolutely. You got to go.
Yeah.
Got to go. They hit one for 60 yards and Michigan suddenly – gets all those bad feelings creeping back in. Who knows where it goes from there? Colton, what
same
do you think?
Thing for Colton.
Yeah, I'm looking at Michigan State's offensive line, and I think they've improved from
you're
last
just playing
year.
To Nick.
No, we have to talk about this.
What the hell is this?
Some guy got mad. Some guy got mad on Twitter and was like, "You're not talking enough about the old line." So Colton, let's do it. We're gonna get into it right now.
I mean, when you look at Michigan State's offensive line, I think they've gotten better, and you know they do the whole substitution thing where they basically have two different offensive lines at this point.
Yeah.
I wonder how that's going to look. You know, do you kind of stick with the hot hand in a game like this, or do you kind of continue that rotation? You know, they played well at times, but other times we've seen them get, you know, overmatched against like Nebraska and Indiana and things like that, where those running lanes for Kenneth Walker aren't available when he kind of is bottled up. Not that it's happened a lot, but when he does kind of have a slower game out there, it kind of affects the passing game because the threat of him running and breaking one loose every game or every play. You know, it kind of sets up play action, the things that they want to do in the passing game with those big shots and explosive plays. And I think that's kind of the key of their offense. They need the balance there. So if one is not there, the other might struggle. So I'm looking at, and I think all of that starts with the offensive line. So if the offensive line is getting, you know, pushed back 3 yards every single play or things like that, Aiden Hutchinson's having a day, it's going to be rough. And I'm not sure how this offense is going to look.
I think that when we talk about that rotation, like I've liked it all year. For them, and actually Sean Newell got asked about it today at Michigan, and he kind of agreed with, I think, Colton, what we've said the whole year, that they're doing that not because they haven't necessarily decided, you know, who they want to play, but because in some capacity they like something that all of those guys can give them. And yeah. Like Newell said it today, like they trust their depth, which is what it is. But I think I'm curious now, do you continue with this rigid sort of like plan of rotating in and out because guys are used to that, or do you want to... Because you're not sort of picking and choosing, or do you want to go with the guys that you sort of trust the most in each individual spot? Because like you said, like Hutchinson moves around. Like he and Hill a lot of times will anchor together and they will overload the other side, right? They will just, Hutchinson and Hill will be on one side, they will overload the other side and they will dare you to come at their best to, especially Aiden, they'll dare you to come at him. And if you don't have a plan for him in terms of like help, and it doesn't matter which tackle, because I mean, I know that Michigan State's tackles are better than they were. Absolutely, everybody up front there is better than they were. But like, Aiden is, and he's like a Bosa. I mean, he's like an
he's a beast.
right? I mean, it's a completely different... He is a complete game wrecker. Michigan State could have everything go the way it wants to go, and he could completely destroy that. So, like, they have your 100%. This is a fascinating thing for them because they have to have a plan of how you're going to help with him, how you're going to stay away from him, how you're not going to mess with certain things that he can do, you know, against you. But I am curious because I do think Michigan State inside, I get both your guys' opinion on this. I think Michigan State can move a little bit up front against Michigan's defensive line. I do think that they can. I think that we've seen enough from Duplain. We've seen enough from Jarvis, good and bad, right? I think that they've got enough in there. I'm just curious to see, Colton, does it keep switching, do you think? Because it probably has to, but I don't know.
I think at this point, yeah, you probably just stick with what's been working. Yeah. Maybe not change. Maybe going to something where you just stick with one group, that might be overthinking it in a game like this instead of just playing to your strengths. It's worked for us so far. Let's keep sticking with it until it doesn't work. But I mean, yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting because they have played well. I think they have proved that they can play up to the moment, but at the same time, I don't think they're matchup proof and I don't think the consistency is there yet. So while they do have the ability to do it, they just have to go out and do it.
And the other thing,
kind of that simple.
And the other thing, Austin, there too, is McDonald with his pressures on third down this year has been very good. And I, you know, and the other guy that we didn't mention there in that whole thing is Ojabo, who is, you know, like a taller, longer Uche, for those who are scoring at home. They can come get him. I mean, like, this is an advantage possibly for Michigan if Michigan State's offensive line isn't, like, in terms of pass rush. I don't know. Like, how do you see that on the other side of that going this week?
Yeah, I mean, I have yet to see a team really be able to slow down Aiden Hutchinson.
Yeah.
I mean, I just haven't seen it this year.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, and he's got, what, 6 sacks? But probably got, I mean, 30 other plays you could pull up on the tape where he affected the play in some way. He
hurried the throw. 35 pressures or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he's just always in the backfield. You got to get it out quick. And I don't think we'll see a team this year really figure out how to totally neutralize him. You know, up the middle, I think Michigan's defense maybe is a little bit more vulnerable. Although, you know, Josh Ross, I think really the way that he has played this year, you know, he's really given Michigan some thump in the middle of that defense that they really needed. If you can get him out in space, you know, maybe that's a way to attack. We've seen some teams try to attack that a little bit. But yeah, I think the combination of those guys on the edges for Michigan and then the way that Mike McDonald uses the pressure of, you know, he'll show it, he'll back it off, he'll bring it from places you're not expecting it, and then maybe you're expecting it from one place and it comes from somewhere else. That's really what he's done really well this year. And I think that's going to continue. You know, Michigan is a team that can get pressure on the quarterback, and that's really paid dividends for him.
We've talked all week, or I have, and I'm not going to make people listen again about how I think the whole thing comes down to Michigan's offensive line against Michigan State's tackles. I'm not going to do that to you. We're going to talk about quarterbacks and wake Brendan up here because we've got – I want Colton – because Colton and I were talking about J.J. McCarthy last weekend. I want Colton to ask Austin and I his you share Colton. I want your perspective on this.
What is he, a fucking jukebox?
No, Colton's perspective is different – than ours. So I want Colton to sort of like share his perspective. You don't have to ask questions, but I want to I want your perspective on this quarterback situation from a what you've seen on the outside looking in. And you know, you're someone who pays attention, but you're not here every day, right? So someone who knows what's going on for the most part, 90%, right? Let's say recruiting on the field, all this stuff. Like, what's your sort of take on this whole thing? Because I think, well, he's laughing, but I think these outside perspectives from smart people are important. Go ahead.
I mean, Nick, I was slacking you last Saturday because, you know, it's my bye week, so I was off. I was watching some college football, and I'm watching the Michigan-Northwestern game, and I know Cade gives you I know what he gives you, what he brings to the table, right? He's an experienced guy. He's going to, you know, give you the safe plays. He's going to move the ball, not turn over. I get all that. I'm watching the game. He's missing on some deep shots, and I know that's kind of been an issue for him. The yards per attempt – pretty low in that game.
Something like that.
And again, it was close in the first half. I know the final score doesn't really indicate that, but it was close in the first half. I'm just like, if they're having a hard time with these deep shots against Northwestern, a team that you should beat pretty handedly, and they ultimately did, I'm just wondering what happens when you get down against teams with more explosive offenses. Like, Penn State, I won't really put them in that discussion because they have some issues. But Michigan State can move the ball. Like, if everything's working, like we mentioned earlier with Kenneth Walker and having that balance in the run and pass game, they're going to put points on the board. And so my thing is, Michigan State has explosive plays. Where is that coming from from Michigan in the passing game? I'm not seeing it. I know they run the ball extremely well. They don't want to turn over. They play solid defense. That's kind of been their bread and butter. But when they do trail against a team with a good offense, I guess my question is, how do they rise to the occasion? How do they, you know, win a shootout? You know, I don't know if JJ – I don't know if Cade can give you that, I guess.
Right. I don't either.
JJ might be able to, but I guess the risk is – he's a true freshman playing in a game like this.
Right.
Probably not ideal, but at the same time, I think they have to incorporate him more if they want a chance to win. That's just kind of my outside looking in perspective.
Brandon, this is why I asked Colton to do this, okay? This because it was a
terrific, brilliant analysis.
A terrific setup for me to allow Austin to give his thoughts on the same exact topic, because this is a very complicated situation. And like every team that we covered, Colton knows the same thing. Like if you know, next year Peyton Thorne's here and they bring in a kid that's like a dude, it's going to be an awkward situation. This is a weird deal. So like Austin having been, you know, Austin is here every day. I want your thoughts on the same situation because everybody, you know, has a different sort of way to unpack this. But like, how do you sort of see this? And I would also ask you the same thing that Colton brought up. Like, what do you think they have to do? And what do you think they will do to sort of answer that question if it comes up? Because I think it's probably going to come up in this game.
So I think the way that Colton described Cade McNamara's game is pretty much on the money. He doesn't make mistakes. He doesn't turn it over. He doesn't take sacks. He's going to miss some throws. He's not the most efficient quarterback you're going to see. But the things he does are the things that Michigan wants from him. Number one, he doesn't go out and lose the game for you. I think the one aspect of Cade McNamara's game that maybe gets overlooked a little bit is, you know, I think there's maybe a reputation that that he's a quarterback who, you know, can't make big plays. He actually has made more throws down the field this year, I think, than maybe some people realize. It's actually been more in like the short and intermediate stuff where he has not been as efficient or as productive. Now, I will say, in terms of like the big plays, a lot of those happened early. You know, he hit a 70-yarder to Ronnie Bell in the opener. He hit an 87-yarder to Cornelius Johnson I think, against NIU.
Blowout or something.
Yeah, right. So he's hit some of those this year, and his yards per attempt was actually really good early in the year. But if you watch it, it's been trending down. And the Northwestern game was by far his least explosive game. Like, everything was underneath. Everything was short. He took a couple shots down the field, didn't connect on any of them. So to me, if you get the Cade McNamara we saw early in the year, where, you know, he's not perfect, he's not maybe super dynamic, but he's hitting a couple big plays every game. If you put that with Michigan's running game, I think you've got a pretty good combination. But if he's not hitting those, like if he's not giving you one or two big plays down the field every game, then I think that's when you start to have the conversation. Like, do you need somebody at quarterback who can give you more of that? And if you do, you've got that guy. It's just a question of, is he ready?
So let me ask ourselves here, Brandon, you can start. Does Michigan have to go to the old freshman hot dog heater in the bullpen there to come out and win this game? Does he have to? Is this half that?
No,
it feels like it's possible.
I think you go with what's gotten you here, but you have to have kind of.
I mean, off the bench. I mean, yeah, right.
I understand. Yeah, like using him the way that they've basically used him. I think you go with what got you here, but then you need to be ready that if Michigan State goes up two touchdowns or something, like, you need to be in that position of having the balls to realize that, like, if you do it, This changes the plan beyond this week. Because if you make the move at halftime, you make that move, whatever, right? It's over. That's what you're doing from there on out. Because you either lose the game, and then what's the point of not playing the freshman? Or he goes and wins the game, and now you can't go back to the old guy. So, like, this goes to what we were saying yesterday, Nick. Like, one way or another, this quarterback situation, I think next week, it changes basically irreparably.
So what's going to happen? Irreparably.
I
Irrevocably.
I broke down there.
So what's going to happen? Is he going to come in or not? What's going to happen? Are they going to need J.J. McCarthy to win this football game?
What would a other coach do? I think most coaches would go.
Well, there you go. That's fair. Yeah.
Would most coaches would end up going with the hotter hand and go with the young guy and go with the highest ceiling possible. What do I think Harbaugh is going to do? I think the guy that he's been riding with is where he's going to ride it and wherever it takes him.
You don't think he's going to make any change, even if it struggles?
No, I mean, I think it's going to be the same thing that we've seen.
Oh, yeah, fair.
I think there's going to be a spot play here and there, and everyone's going to woo!
And then like,
he's
going
to go right back to what he's been doing.
Golden, do you think, same thing, because like I think that this is kind of like the hinge point of the game. It's like if Michigan State takes away or limits the run, and when I say limits, I mean just like limits it to a point where like you're still running the ball, but it's taking you an hour and a half to get down the field. Like,
yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm like, because they're going to run the ball. They're going to have success. They're going to get their numbers. But it's like if it's taking you, you know, 7-minute drives and things like that, that's not going to work because Michigan State can score in three plays with this offense at times. Like when they're right, they can do that. And so I guess when I'm looking at it, it's like if they get down a touchdown or two, they cannot be afraid to go to JJ and just give him the keys. Like he needs to be prepared. I don't know if that's something that they can focus on in practice this week or if it's too late. You know, that maybe that's something that they should have been preparing him for earlier in the year so he would be ready for a moment like this. But I don't know if Cade can give you those plays to win a game if you get down, to win a high-scoring game. Because I know Michigan probably would prefer this to be low-scoring and a defensive, run-minded kind of outcome.
Yeah.
But, again, that's my question. If Jaden Reed gets loose on these corners or if Jalen Naylor does that and they go up and Kenneth Walker's doing his thing on the ground, they can kind of run out some clock there or kind of have that balance. I just don't know if Michigan's offense can keep up. You know, you're not going to get an 80-yard run, you wouldn't think. Like, that's not really going to
– Right.
I think
Michigan's defense is the single most important unit in this game in terms of the overall which way does this thing go, you know, if that makes sense.
Sure. Now – with the quarterback situation here, of course, I wouldn't disagree with that because, you know, Michigan State can, you know, I think they could bottle them and they could still pop, you know, big plays like you said. But with the quarterbacks, Austin, like this is the delicate sort of part here. And this is where we've arrived at, like, and Brendan said it at the top, and that's not wrong, that like if McCarthy comes into this game and does something that helps them win, you know, then this is over and this part of it is over and a different conversation starts. But at the same token, if McNamara plays the game out and wins it, and they just continue to do the things that they're doing, then that's probably what they'll continue to do. I'd ask you sort of the same thing I'm asking these guys. Like, what do you think we'll see in this game? Do you think that we'll see? Because I don't know if it's necessarily like, and I agree with both of you, like Brendan Colton, like if they get down, you absolutely have to think about things. I'm not even sure. I think that you have to think about it before that. I think you have to think about ways to introduce him to the offense more earlier that doesn't involve just you're the starter now.
Mm-hmm.
Rest of the game. Like, because I think they do actually have, Austin, a unique-ish dynamic with McNamara that if you could keep him engaged, he can still give you things in that game that will help you win it on top of what McCarthy's adding. Does that make sense? Like,
Totally.
I want your perspective on that because I think that that's important sort of nuance to explain there.
Yeah, I think we have to say, I mean, this is a pretty delicate situation. There's a lot of ways to screw it up, right? When you've got
there's more ways to screw it up than get it right, I think. Yeah.
When you've got a player like McCarthy who is the future, like you have to keep him engaged, you have to develop him. But if you don't feel like he's ready and you have a player like Cade McNamara, you also need to you need to keep the team behind Cade McNamara. You know, Nick, you were in the room post game after Northwestern.
Yeah, I was.
Cade had a little bit of an edge to him after that game.
Sounded like Harbaugh.
At the first question, so Harbaugh comes out there.
I've been on the other end of a few of those, my man.
So Harbaugh comes out there and says something about how they forced some throws down the field. And then Cade comes out there and the first question is like, well, you know, Coach Harbaugh was just sitting here talking about hey, you guys forced some throws down the field. I didn't think we forced anything down the field. You could just kind of tell, you know, Cade McNamara's like, you know, he's taking one for the team a little bit, right? Like, he's going out there and he's playing the way that they're asking him to play. And every week he's got to see JJ come in and make a play like he made, where he's running around in the backfield, you know, throwing across the field. You know, and you know, fans love those plays. They're great. JJ can do that. It's part of why he's such a talented quarterback. You know, every week Cade McNamara is going out there and doing the things that he's being asked to do. You know, and he takes some flack for it, but the team's 7-0, and it's worked. Yeah. And so I just, you know, to what you guys were saying earlier, it feels like it's not something that can last exactly like this through the rest of the season. Something's going to tip. I think.
Go ahead.
Either Cade McNamara.
This game always tips everything.
And Cade McNamara is going to make a couple throws in this game where you're like, yep, he's the guy. You got to ride him. Or Michigan's going to get down and it's going to be obvious that, okay, it's time for JJ.
The thing that I don't know, and the thing that, and Colton brought it up, is that I don't know that they don't already have that plan. I don't know that they don't, like, I've looked at this almost like as not one or the other. I've almost, like, the way that we've seen it all year, it's been like shifting sands. Mm-hmm. Like, if McNamara's here and McCarthy's here, and I think it's doing like this, like, you know what I mean? And I think it's like evening. And so I think it just needs to even. And you, if he's doing things, doing more things in practice and such, he needs to play more. And if he's making more plays in the game, then his time needs to go up. And Cade's needs to go down. That's sort of how this... It's how I think it has to happen. I think that's how you can sell it. That's the only way you can sell it, I think. And as mature as McNamara is, I think that's the only way you can keep a kid like that. Because you're going to need him. If you turn it over to a freshman, and he's still all the things that you love, but like, you know, you're like, Jesus, man. Like, we can't turn the ball over like that. Like, then you've got to go back to the other guy. And like Brendan said, he's going to be washed. You're not going to get him. I mean, he's a human. Right,
like, and how does the team respond? They obviously follow this dude.
Well, I think they like McCarthy. Like, I think that's not a problem.
Sure, right? But it's also, you know, there's something to be said. And
I think they actually
guys in the huddle, and they know that
this feels like a.
I'm just saying, it's hard to change a quarterback who's fucking undefeated.
This feels like a disaster, like a bubbling disaster that a lot of teams would have. I don't know. I think Michigan does have a chance to thread the needle here. I don't know if they will.
Be wildly impressive.
But I
have two
do.
Questions.
You know, I don't know.
I tweeted free JJ last
free
week.
Free JJ.
And oh boy.
Michigan
Look
State
at you
were,
just stirring the pot.
Michigan State fans are ready to run me out of town for tweeting that because they know that he's got something. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, he
That's
does.
All I'm going to say.
He does.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Do we care that the road team has won, by my count, 5 of the last 6. Mean anything? Nothing. It's the first game in East Lansing, let's remember, since 2018. Back-to-back games in Ann Arbor.
I'll tell you this. I don't think either team cares where this game is played. I don't think either team
They'll play it in the parking lot, these guys.
I do. I think both these teams are tough upstairs. I think these teams... I think this is going to be a good game.
That's
I don't know. Any of you guys disagree with me? I don't know.
Do you guys care? Okay.
I don't think
Yeah. No. It has in the past. It has in the past, I would say.
That you have boasted and cited the mental fortitude of both of these groups. That said, which is more prone to the gaffe? We said this yesterday, Nick, where I'm like... Is there a better chance this game ends with one of these teams going out and winning it?
Oh, yeah.
Doing some shit and everyone saying, wow, man, this might be a playoff team, blah, blah, blah. Or does one team pull its pants down in the final 4 minutes and something crazy happens on a bad mistake or whatever it may be. The game's light rain, temperatures in like the high 40s. You know, like
it's Antonio just, upstairs somewhere.
They're both undefeated. Like, weather there's buttons. Just this, there's this wonderful recipe for
Antonio with the storm finish,
or it's just somebody doing something that just goes down in infamy. What do we think,
Bolton? What say you?
I don't know if this is a game for that because, I mean, I'll speak for Michigan State, and it's like that would be pretty uncharacteristic for this team. Like they haven't really shot themselves in the foot too often. I think more than anything, they've taken advantage of those opportunities, like against Nebraska, you know, getting the punt return when they just punted to the wrong side of the field, apparently, ran that one back for a touchdown to tie it up and win in overtime. So, like, the only time that I've kind of been, you know, questioning what was going on in the field was against Indiana because they had a lot of penalties in that game. That was not, you know, indicative of these games that we've seen earlier. And I'm pretty sure Mel Tucker addressed that over the bye week. They had a lot of time to kind of run that back and say, what the hell were you doing on that play? So I don't know. Maybe Austin can speak to the Michigan side of things, but I'm not really expecting like a Nebraska-esque, you know, play that will just ruin the game on either side. But I don't know. What do you think, Austin?
I mean, there's some precedent for that from Michigan, but not this year. I mean, that's the weird part. Is like, can you trust what you've seen for seven games this year? Because for seven games, Michigan has been a team that does not go out and beat itself. Like all the mistakes that Michigan teams have made in the recent past, this team is not making those mistakes. And I guess there's two ways to look at it. You could say, you know, they're saving some of those up for the second half of the year. Or you can say they're that they've waiting. Figured something out. And I honestly don't know. I've seen enough, I guess, over these seven games to say I trust this Michigan team more than certainly either of the other two Michigan teams I've covered here for sure.
We have arrived at that point, my man, because they're both right. This is a good game. This is one of the hardest Michigan State games to pick since I've been doing this because these are two, they're just similar. They're really familiar teams. They have, you know, they both have really good players who can blow a game up. They both have talented backs. They both have improved rosters. They both have a lot and they're disciplined, you know, like that's, I guess, the takeaway that I have is like, they're both, I told you this, Brandon, like a month ago, I would not want to play either of them. They are both tough ass football teams. Like they're not perfect. They're not flawless. They don't claim to be, but like, if you want to play them for 60 minutes, you're getting the full 60 minutes. And if you can't only have 45, you're losing. Like, I mean, that's the deal. All year, it's been like that with these guys, both sides.
So for each of you guys, right, say your respective team wins this game, right? The conversation this year has been, are either of these teams good? Like, legitimately good, right? Yeah. Because of the schedule, because of the expectations, right? They both started with no expectations and have won against bad schedules. So what the hell does that leave you with, right? That's the question. So whoever wins this game, so Colton, if Michigan State wins, Austin, if Michigan wins, how good are you willing to be to say that that team is coming out, right? Are you going to be like, this might be a playoff? Like, this team can beat Ohio State. This team can actually go to the playoff and do something. Like, what is the reasonable ceiling for either of these?
I guess I'll start. I mean, when looking at Michigan State, if you win this, you're 8-0. The college football playoff rankings come out Tuesday. And then,
of course they do.
And then you look at the next couple games after that, they've got Purdue and Maryland. Those are both winnable games. We could be talking about a 10-0 team going into Ohio State. And that's wild to say. Absolutely fucking wild to say. But we're here, and that's on the table right now. And so I don't think that they're going to beat Ohio State. I think Ohio State's probably going to win that easily at home. But, I mean, we could be talking about, you know, if Ohio State's in the playoff, you know, who goes to the Rose Bowl? Like, Michigan State could be the next best team in the conference. You know, would probably be in the West, but they would, you know, lose to Ohio State in that scenario with two losses and things like that. So, I mean, you're talking about a New Year's Six Bowl in year two after a 2-5 season. So regardless what ends up happening later, like that's on the table and all that stuff is there. And this is a big game that can get you there and keep you on that path.
Yeah, I mean,
interesting.
Is anybody good this year in college football? Like, take Georgia out of the equation.
It's like every year now. Like, yeah, right.
I mean,
take Georgia's defense out. Yeah, take right.
One half of Georgia's team out of the equation.
Like, I just watched Oklahoma have to completely pull something out of its ass to beat Kansas. Yeah. And like that's that happens.
Free tickets, come on down. What a moment that was.
Yeah. But honestly, but
holy stuff shit. Like that,
there's something to be said about 7-0.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah. Like you can say like the winner of this game, are they good? I don't know. Like I don't know if 8-0 Michigan with a win against Michigan State would be like playoff good or national championship good. But there's just not really anybody I feel comfortable saying that about in this season of college football. So I think it's just about like win the games, you know? I mean, I think Michigan could get to the Ohio State game undefeated and we'd still be saying, is this team good? And we might not know, but they'd be 11-0 and you know, that's what matters.
The winner of this game is going to be gunfight good. And that is going to be good enough to scare the shit out of anybody they play the rest of the year. And that's my answer to that question, because I don't think it's going to necessarily matter. Because it's the same for everybody, like you said, except Georgia and Alabama. Everyone else, and Ohio State, I suppose, right? But like pretty much everybody else in the same boat. You know, if you're a tough team that can pull the gun out and shoot somebody, right? And like in a hot second, and both these teams have been able to do that. Like they're not comfortable. I wouldn't want to play them, man. They're confident. They don't take shit from people. Like they're a good Big Ten team, and when you have a legit good, they're both of them are. And when you have legit good Big Ten teams, I think they can shrink margins sometimes, and you never know. I mean, sometimes the speed gets you, of course, usually does, but like, I don't know, right? I wouldn't want to play either team right now. That's how I look at it. I don't know who's good or who's not, but I also think, like we said yesterday, Brennan, like the idea of what the number six team in the country means anymore from what it was 15 years ago is, you know, or even 10 probably. I don't know what that means. I don't, you know, Colton, I would ask you that, like, as a younger guy, like, when you think of, like, oh, that team's number six, what does that mean to you in terms of, like, what do I think that team is? Like, how good do I think that team is?
Like,
do you think that the number six should be able to beat number one?
No, it's kind of like a placeholder thing. Sure. It's like, well, if you're anywhere from 6 to 10, the question is, are you legit or not? Can you rise up to that top four, or are you going to fall back into the top? You know, bottom half of the top 25. Yeah. So, like, I think that's fair for both of these teams. But at the same time, like, in a weird year like this, I've said it all year, winning games is all that matters. Like,
yes,
teams are dropping like flies every other week. So if you're 7-0, you're 8-0, you're 9-0, you're going to have a chance. And that it just depends on when you have that big game on your schedule. Can you win it or not? And obviously that's the question for Michigan. Michigan State, it didn't feel like we were going to get to this point, at least not this early. But they're in this conversation now, and a win over that, you know, kind of sets up the rest of the year with games against Ohio State and then Penn State to end the regular season. So this is a pivotal point for both teams. It's kind of weird that we're here, but that's where we are.
Just imagine the day there once upon a time when just random old men spread across the country cast ballots, and that's how we determined who won. Or who was going to go play in a national championship game. Crazy times.
Wasn't that long ago?
Some guy at the Boise Beacon newspaper, whatever, had a vote that mattered.
What was that?
And who would play in a national Boise Beacon? I just made that up. I assume at some point the Boise Beacon existed.
Oh, my God. Well, do we have any questions here? We can probably get into a couple. I did ask
some.
Oh,
yeah, you did a Twitter thing,
let's see here. Andrew asks, what do you make of the reports that Michigan didn't take Michigan State seriously in 2020? Vincent Gray said they didn't know who Ricky White was before the game. Another one that's kind of off topic, does Michigan win the Big Ten in 2000? No, we'll leave that one. That's for later or a different podcast. That one right there. We talked about this a little bit. The last year stuff, like, they did not know who Ricky... He wasn't on the scout, what? I assume. He wasn't on the scouting report. He was too deep on the... On the depth chart, Austin, is that how this was relayed?
Somebody asked Vince Gray last night, did you know who Ricky White was before the game last year? And he said no. And so that's where that came from. I mean, most of the guys this week have been like, we're not talking about last year. That's in the past. but, you know, I'll give Vince Gray some credit. Like, you know, that's a guy who, you know, he's been through some stuff.
It's a rough day for him. Last year.
You know, he came out there last night and he's like, yeah, we looked past them last year. They ruined our season last year, and we're not forgetting about that. you know, and I think that's probably much more indicative of the mindset at Michigan than everything else, you know, nameless, faceless opponent, all that stuff we've heard this week. Like, it's Michigan State. They remember what happened. Yeah, they probably did look past him a little bit last year because, I mean,
Milton said it in the postgame.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah, like, that's right. Yeah.
You remember that? Colton, he was like, well, I don't know who Antoine Simmons is. Well, this guy had 18 right. tackles.
Part of me was like, was he just like, the hell? You know, not trying to give him any credit, or like, did he actually?
Oh,
not
I think
know
it was a little bit of, I don't know.
That's
on that. Simmons had to have been. Simmons had to have been
the best player on defense.
He was probably just shading him on that one. But
yeah.
To the point, though, is like, clearly they overlooked the entire football team, obviously, sure. Right? And to a point of, is that happening again? I mean, I would say that if that game didn't happen, you wouldn't have the culture change at Michigan, frankly. Right, Austin? Yeah. I mean, like, would you agree with that?
No, totally.
You would not have these changes. Don Brown would still be here.
Yeah.
If they won that game, I'm not lying. If they won that game by a field goal, Colton, and maybe one other game that year, I don't know if they would have fired Don Brown.
Yeah. Did Rocky Lombardi cost him his job?
Yes. I think Rocky, yes. Yeah, absolutely he did. Rocky Lombardi got him fired that day, and so did Mel, and that's why they changed everything. I mean, like, that's really, it was. That's the game right there that was like, okay, like, it's been bad, and everyone here has been willing to sort of like look the other way on some of this, but what in the hell did we just watch? That is completely unacceptable. COVID or no COVID. Like that,
Colton,
was that
that's
was.
That's one for the notebook, my man, where like, you know, 20 yeah. years from now, there's you're going to be, yeah. you know, one of the most famous sports writers in the country. We'll all be, dead. I'll be dead.
Yeah.
Nick will be working in a gas station. Austin will probably be living a wonderful life yeah. as a very normal person. Colton, you're going to be like just super big time, blah, blah, blah. Find that notebook. Remember that moment. Find Rocky Lombardi. You have to promise to us you will find Rocky Lombardi. Take him to lunch at Applebee's and ask him all these years later what it felt like to end a man's career.
To get Don Brown fired.
Don Brown
spot.
Had an amazing coaching career, and Rocky Lombardi
ran his ass right out of town.
Put him in an early grade.
And then lost his job a week later, right? Like, that's what happened. 2 weeks later, was it, Colton? What a crazy year. What the fuck? Yeah. I think back on it last year, right? Like, this is about when it started. I think this is like opening weekend, wasn't it? Like, Halloween was...
Halloween,
oh, shit,
week
that's
two.
Right, because everything
the
was
the first
delayed.
Game. Yep. And
second game, yeah.
Wow.
Second game, was it?
Yeah, because Michigan like, beat Minnesota, remember? And everybody
was
like
was,
on the
but
Joe
I thought that
Milton
was Halloween.
Heisman
yeah,
train.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Right around this time of year, mm-hmm. I can't even like... To think about where we were then and sort of where we are, everyone is now. That's, I don't know. I'm excited for this because I think last year fucking sucked and nobody deserved to go through it. And I'm happy that people, because, you know, I mean, I'm the only lifelong Michigander on the old call here, but I know everybody on the call likes the mitten here and everything else. But we love our football around here and we don't get enough good football. And last year was pretty bad. So this is going to be... I think this is going to be fun. This is going to be, I don't want to make anybody give picks before we get out of here or anything else, because we have picks coming later, but I am going to make Brendan give one before we
oh,
go. But,
nice.
Colton and okay. Austin, before we make Brendan give one, just sort of give me like your last sort of thoughts on what you feel like, you know, the team you're covering, what you feel like they really need to do and maybe one thing they have to do and one thing they cannot do in this game to get through it. If that's too much on the spot, that's fine. Or just give me a
we're not giving predictions here, everybody?
You can you if you are. Want, I guess. You are.
Just, okay. I feel like that we're not giving the people what they want, but
the
all
predictions
right.
okay. are coming in a story later this week. Is what
subscribe
I
to The Athletic.
Yeah, they're going to get the predictions.
Cheap bastards.
Yeah, okay. So all go right. ahead. Sorry.
One thing Michigan has to do, I think, at least three sacks. Three sacks on Thorne.
At least three sacks.
One thing they can't do. Lose the turnover battle. Michigan's got to win the turnover.
I agree with both those. Colton?
Yeah, I think you got to avoid the penalties. Can't have that kind of ruin that Indiana game for a while there. And again, I thought that was kind of uncharacteristic. So if they clean that up over the bye, then that's probably good timing for that then. and I think they need balance in the run game and the pass game. That's kind of been their bread and butter. When they have success, when they're putting points on the board, that's there. And mm-hmm. when they're having that success, they're hard to beat, you know, like I don't know if like I mentioned earlier, I don't know if Michigan has the offense, the way that it's structured, where they want to run the ball. They have no problem taking their time, working their way down the field. when you get into a scenario where you need to put up, you know, 27, 30, 35, can they do that against a team like Michigan State where they do have a solid defense and also the explosive plays offensively to kind of win those games? So I think if they can do that, it's going to be pretty tough to beat, especially at home. That place can be packed and rocking loud. They're doing a green out and everything. Just got an email about be aware of fraudulent tickets.
Oh, God.
Got some of that to look out for, so it's going to be wild.
Big game alert.
There's no concern for the Eagles-Lions game. No concern there. If you've got a ticket to that game, it is real.
That's going
to
be the Kansas game. Hey, open the doors. Come on in.
Big game alert when we got the fraud tickets. I would add, for Michigan State, Peyton Thorne, I think Peyton Thorne's been a big-time quarterback all year, and I think in this game he has to be – this has to be big time Peyton Thorne. He has to be the guy that we think he is. And then I would say for Michigan, it's a grander point, but like you can't be afraid of your talent. You can't. They have more talent. They have wider margins. They're more explosive on the edge. You cannot be afraid of your talent, even if it's young. You have to cut them loose and let them make you look good. That's what I would say. If both those teams do those things, man, this is gonna be a fight, and we're gonna see what happens. I think it is gonna be a fight. It's a hard one to predict. You will all read our predictions later in the week, and now the one you've been waiting for. here comes the Oracle. Brendan, what do you got?
Well,
here for Michigan State.
I've obviously been breaking down this game every which way.
For years.
I've been watching film, been talking to both staffs, right, making calls.
Exclusively.
Making sure I get an idea of what they're thinking. Incredibly evenly matched, obviously, across the board. I have a lot of difficulty. Yesterday I was thinking Michigan State. Today I've been thinking Michigan. Were you talking about Austin Hutchinson? I was like, oh man, you know, he's the best player in the field.
He is.
Of all the guys, he's probably the best player in the field. Mm-hmm. You know, so he'll do something. So I go back and forth on each matchup group. Can't come to a conclusion. So I'm going to go straight narrative.
Okay. I wouldn't expect anything different.
My specialty. Michigan is so overdue for anything remotely good to happen to it.
That's very true.
It's like something has to happen at some time, right?
That's true.
So I will say that this game is neither a shootout or low scoring. It's going to be right in that middle area, you know?
Not showing off, not falling behind, yep.
So yeah, right, like right in that 28-point range, 24-point range I'm seeing. Michigan wins on a disastrously bad officiating call.
Oh, gee, of course. You son of a bitch.
Michigan State loses its mind.
This guy.
Michigan is running off the field, laughing. Everyone's furious.
Are we going to have a nickname? We got a nickname for it?
Everyone's going to be furious because Michigan fans are going to be furious that they won but didn't technically win.
The theft at the woodshed.
Michigan State fans are going to be furious. And we will come back Monday and talk about it.
Theft in the woodshed or a disaster in the deep water is Brendan's prediction prediction for this game. Well, gentlemen, I appreciate the time, of course. And I'm sure we'll be back later in the year because I think both these teams are still going to have chances to do something. That's the other thing I guess I would point out. I think that I could be wrong, but I think when we did the I think Stu did his bowl picks this week, and both Michigan and Michigan State were in near six bowls, I think. So, like, loser of this game is still a good spot.
If they expanded the playoff for this
would have been cool, right? Like, that would have been a good year to have it. But it gives me hope. It gives me hope for maybe if LSU and these teams can leave Mel Tucker alone, that maybe we can have more of these, you know, down the road. It does give me hope. So, we'll see. We'll see. Brandon, you want to take us out of here?
Yeah, everyone. Big week for the state of Michigan.
Yes.
So of this week, of all weeks, support your local restaurants. And when you do, tip your bartenders and servers. Here to the county, the place where I